When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to SportsBeat KC, the Kansas City Stars sports podcast. I'm Blair Kirkhoff. The votes have been counted for the extension of the sales tax to fund a new ballpark for the Royals in the Crossroads District and upgrades at Arrowhead Stadium for the Chiefs, and it went down to defeat this week. Sports columnists Sam McDowell and Vahe Gregorian wrote terrific columns on the outcome, and they share their thoughts on the issue on today's show. We discuss how and why the Royals and Chiefs failed to convince voters and what is the next step for both teams. We start the show with the concession speeches from Royals owner John Sherman and Chiefs president Mark Donovan. They're introduced by former Kansas City Mayor Sly James. Okay, let's get started.
That's unfortunate, but we do want to make sure that you understand how much we appreciate everybody in this room who worked hard on behalf of this campaign and keeping the Royals and the Chiefs in Jackson County. We had help from every sector. We had help from labor. We had help from freedom. We had help from the Latino community. We had help in the Black community, white community, and everybody else. It simply wasn't enough to get it through, and that's unfortunate. But without burdening that issue too much, I would like to give an opportunity to John Sherman to say a few words, and then followed by Mark Donovan.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for being in the fight with us. This was was a valiant effort. We won a baseball game tonight, but we didn't win this. You know, we respect the democratic process. We respect the voters of Jackson County and the results of the election today. We're deeply disappointed, as we are steadfast in our belief that Jackson County is far better off with the Chiefs and the Royals. This is a belief that I hold both professionally and personally, as someone whose roots run deep in this town, as someone who has been a dedicated fan, a season ticket holder for both of these teams, and now leading a remarkable ownership group assembled for its ties to Kansas City. We thank all those who worked on this election for their time and commitment. They are here in this room and well beyond. They know who they are. We will take some time to reflect on and process the outcome and find a path forward that works for the Royals and our fans. Thank you.
First and foremost, we've been talking a lot about the democratic process. We respect the process. We respect the decision of the Jackson County voters today. We're disappointed. We feel we put forth the best offer for Jackson County, and we were ready to extend the long-standing partnership that the teams have enjoyed with this county. This is important. We want to thank everyone that worked tirelessly on our behalf. We truly appreciate all the effort, all the time, and all the work that you all put in. We will do, and we'll look to do, what is in the best interest of our fans and our organization as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Sam McDowell and Vahe Gregorian, guys, I want to start by, let's go behind the scenes a little bit of where we were during the vote. We were all at J. Rieger and Company Distillery, where the yes vote rally was. And let me just pause here and say, what a great place J. Rieger and Company Distillery is. Shameless plug for that establishment. And they're not sponsoring this podcast in any way, but I really enjoyed my visits to that place.
I think you made the point that we were there first, that we'd been up there for a Kansas City Star night with Star Sports writers a few months ago. And I guess, as ever, we're setting the tone.
That's right. Exactly. There were subscribers that night. It was great. It was great to see. So we're set up shop in one of the corners of the distillery, and we're watching the results come in, mostly on our laptops. It wasn't like it was on a – this was only like the second political rally I've ever attended, and the other one was a gubernatorial race in another state. I'll tell you more about it later. But they had the – I remember there they had screens up, and so you were following the results there. This time we were following the results on our own screens, and – the decision came in pretty early, pretty quickly on this. And I'll start, my first question will be, I'll start with Sam. When did you first see signs of trouble for the yes vote?
Well, we had anticipated that the Jackson County vote, especially the early vote that came in first, was not going to be favorable to this, because all the polling had shown that Eastern Jackson County was not favorable to the project as a whole. I mean, you know, for obvious reasons, the location of the Royals would be further from people in Lee's Summit, Oak Grove, Independence. But we were told that the Kansas City, because this comes in two batches with Jackson County Election Board and Kansas City Election Board, we were led to believe that the Kansas City portion of Jackson County would be much more favorable to this project. So when the first batch of Kansas City came in and it looked exactly similar to the Jackson County batch, I think that was our first sign that it was not going to go well for the proponents of it.
Yes, to Sam's point, Sam was way more cognizant of the numbers faster than I was in terms of what the implications were. What I found interesting was that not much after Sam had felt like this is going to be an impossible margin to make up, or at least a miraculous margin to make up, it was really maybe 15 minutes after that Mayor Lucas, I think, was the first to concede the point and put it out there. And I thought it was it spoke to the whole meaning of the night, how much clarity there was in the response. I think we both used the word rebuke in what we said. And I think that's what it was. And I had expected it to be a late night till we even knew what the result was, and that it would be really close.
Right. But we, back to the scene for a second, we went where we were sitting, we could see across the room into another smaller room where the consultants were apparently had their war room. And Mark Donovan, Chiefs president, was in there and looking over results. And this was around 8:30 or so, and spending a lot of time in there at that point. And I think that was his indication that it wasn't going to pass. But it was an interesting scene to be able to sit across and have a look into the room where they were and not see the results that he wanted to see.
It was interesting, too, because it was, you know, an upbeat, vibrant crowd. And I suppose fully anticipating a victory, or maybe these rallies are always like that. Like you go in and your side has the event, and you go in assuming you should be optimistic. But it was interesting the gradual fizzle out of people leaving. It wasn't abrupt. I mean, there were still people there for a while, but it certainly with another 45 minutes or so, it was pretty empty. One quick thing I just want to bring up before I forget that relates to last night, scenery wise, is that we all came back to the Star to work here in the Crown Center area, and I drove by the East Village, and I thought to myself, how this might have played out differently if it would have played out differently if that had been the site. And then I also drove by the Chartreuse Saloon, and we went by there the other day and saw a pretty dynamic poster in the window of, you know, portraying a wrecking ball and laying siege to the area, and there was a big crowd in front of the Chartreuse Saloon, and I didn't stop to check if it was a celebrating crowd, but I assume it was, because they've been one of the outspoken institutions that had been very upset and worried about this.
I came behind you guys by about 15 minutes, and the party was still happening at Chartreuse, because I took the same route to the newspaper from Jay Rieger. All right, let's just talk a little bit. Let's do the autopsy. I think there are, for a vote to be as decisive as this one, 58%, 58 and change to, you know, less than 42%, there are many, many reasons. I was surprised by the outcome and shocked by the margin. And maybe being surprised by the outcome is because I've only had followed it from the yes perspective. Both of you guys spent much more time on with the no's and dealing with the other side. But all of my time really was spent with, you know, the Kathy Nelsons, the Bob Kendricks, the Royals, the Chiefs, and so my perspective was skewed a little bit. But let's break it down. Let's try to come up with three or four reasons why it lost as decisively as it did.
Well, I think at the top, like all the subsequent reasons we'll have will fall under the umbrella that I think these teams thought it would be easier than it was. And you mentioned the time we spent with the no people, and it said it last week on this podcast, it really stood out how organized that they were. And that is the antithesis of the way I think any of us would describe the campaign. It was just a moving target for the last 16 months from the Royals' perspective. And because of that moving target, they gave themselves a really short runway to explain how this crossroads site was going to work. And, you know, I mean, Blair, we talked about it last night. It shows a level of sophistication from the voters that they said, we need more details because we know more than 42% of this city loves these teams.
Right.
And the fact that that was the audience that said no to this, they said, you owe us more. You can't just ask us for something without explaining exactly what the money's going to go toward, what it's going to look like, who it's going to affect, how it's going to affect them. And I think I'll hand this over to Vahe because it touches on his column. That's what they should be telling themselves this morning. I'm not sure that is what they're telling themselves this morning, as opposed to saying, what are we going to do next? But I think before you decide what you are going to do next, you need to have this conversation we're having, which is what went wrong.
That's a great point. And I think if they are as sophisticated as they ought to be, they're doing that right now. They're doing their own autopsy and they're asking themselves the real questions. And they're saying they talked last night about the democratic process and respecting it. Part of that means respecting the voice of the people and not just saying, we are really angry. We put a lot into this and it didn't go our way. We're going to go open up the, you know, landscape. I mean, obviously they're going to take some time to process it, but obviously I'm sure they're open to other options as they've made the point. But I think if they really want to demonstrate that the trust they asked for was earned, they would double down on this instead of saying, we're mad at you for not trusting us. Yeah, I think that's a pretty vital point. The one thing I want to add, and this is really largely anecdotal, but I tell you what, I was not around the no groups the way Sam was at all. But, you know, I live maybe 3 or 4 miles from here. And, you know, we get out, you know, whether we're out eating or walking the dogs or seeing neighbors, ours is a walking neighborhood. I must have talked to 25 people the last few days. We got some vote yes signs in our neighborhood. But I cannot tell you how many people, before I even asked about it, brought up the threat implication and how infuriating it was to them. And I suppose that it was constructed or introduced to be the thing that tweaks somebody to go the other way if they're on the fence. I think it did exactly the opposite. I think if you were on the fence about it, this pushed you the other way.
I think
just my perception, but that's...
No, I think that was a major part of it. I mean, I think when Blair asked for the top 3 or 4 reasons, that should be one of them. And that comes from, look, I thought the first part of this campaign, which only had the Royals involved, was just, it's haphazard's the way I described it. Like, we didn't know where they were going. It was 6 months later after they announced 2 finalists that we learned it's a different site altogether. And it just it was very difficult for the voter to latch on to why this was even happening. then the Chiefs enter the fray. And I thought for a brief period, we had a little bit of a deep breath. But when the campaign takes over and it's a national group that's running this, it didn't have a local Kansas City flavor to it at all. If you had asked any of the three of us if that message would resonate in Kansas City, I think all of us would have said no. Like, that is not a smart message to resonate in Kansas City. And Vi, you had a conversation with John Sherman last week where he basically admitted that that was not something that he thought was something that they would do. But people, what do you say, people smarter than him came up with that strategy. And they might be smarter politically than John Sherman is, but they don't know Kansas City the way that the Royals do. And I thought that was a massive mistake.
I do think so. And I think it was very telling that John answered the question the way he did, saying that you know, I think the term was basically, if people smarter than me tell me that resonates, or have said that that resonates. And he was right. It did resonate, but not the way they wanted to. And I think what was also interesting about that, we got talking about that late last night among the three of us, was that it demonstrated that they kind of yielded their own convictions to a different entity.
Which to me tells me that they did not think this was going well.
That's true.
That was an acknowledgement without publicly saying it, that they needed help.
Yes.
And we saw a few of those along the way when they rolled out East Village in North Kansas City, and then they pick a different site. That's an acknowledgement that we need more help.
Yeah.
When they close down Oak Street on the second attempt, but not the first, or open up Oak Street on the second attempt after closing on the first one, that's another acknowledgement that we didn't get this right the first time. And so that needs to be part of their assessment of this as well, is, you know, before these public announcement comes out, you got to have your details in order. And to me, that's the overarching theme of it all. Because I think nationally, a lot of this narrative is going to be what we saw in Phoenix, for example, when we looked afar at the Coyote situation. And people are going to say that taxpayers are tired of funding these stadiums for billionaires. And look, there is a national shift in that over the last 10 to 15 years. But they had enough support for this outside of that faction of people in Kansas City. It's the stuff we're talking about that swayed this election, not this distaste for funding stadiums in general.
I do think that there is a fatigue on the part of Jackson Countyans with their property tax fiasco of last year that may have played a role. The very recent, right, in the memories of the bank accounts of Jackson County voters. I did hear about that from people who were planning on voting no, that they're already taxed in probably in a greater way than others in other counties in the metro, which includes the current 3/8-cent sales tax. But then the property tax fiasco of last year kind of contributed to this. So also, if to a point that both of you made just moments ago, if I'm John Sherman, Clark Hunt, Mark Donovan, Brooke Sherman today, I'm really interested in having conversations with the no voters. To me, the next listening tour should be only people that voted no. Royals and Chiefs fans who voted no. Royals and people that love the teams and support the teams voted no. That's who I'd be most interested in discussing this with.
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, like, they welcomed those people. Welcome's probably too strong of a word at their listening tours. Vahe and I went to an event at Arrowhead 2 weeks ago where we know that Casey Tennant's interrupted it. But I think that they always thought that was a vocal minority. And that's why I just really emphasize just the organization of those groups. Like, you know, they often say in politics that, you know, it's not just that they need you to vote. You need to get your friends out to vote as well. And like, that's how the organization of those groups works, is, you know, they're able to get more people to go out to the polls. And look, this had an incredible turnout for an April election, especially a standalone item. But I credit that to the no side more so than the yes side, is that they were motivated to vote. And that speaks to the larger point with the Chiefs and Royals. Like, they motivated these people to vote. And a lot of it was, you know, we've talked about the lack of details, but not the specifics of it. I mean, we didn't know what the Crossroads district was going to look like. We didn't know what businesses were going to be affected inside the district and on the perimeter right outside the district. We didn't know how they were going to be affected. The Royals hadn't had conversations with some of those people outside the district, which just amazes me. And, you know, we're still in the dark about the financial commitments from the city and the state. And there was just, I mean, the way I phrase it in the column is that I thought the campaign was just, trust us, like, we'll get this stuff done. And look, they might have. I don't think all three of us here do not think that John Sherman is a bad faith actor in this. This is a lack of execution. This is a lack of good planning, a lack of good strategy.
Just the opposite when it comes to John Sherman. I regret how he was portrayed in this by the nose. He's not the ruthless billionaire. He just isn't.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, because I think that's a great point. But I think the Royals walked into this not knowing that's how he would be portrayed, and they should have foreseen that, because I think, just from the outside looking in, it just had the appearance that John Sherman anticipated that his reputation in Kansas City would precede him in this, because he has a good reputation in Kansas City. But in these types of situations, it's his reputation as a rich billionaire owner. And that's not something that he's been in that role for all that long. And that, to your point, Blair, is the way he was portrayed by a lot of the no groups. And I agree with you that that's not accurate. He doesn't fit the norm of a lot of these people that are asking for this kind of money.
That you use the very word I was going to use, Blair, which is regret or regrettable. It saddens me that became part of the narrative, because really the most substantial pieces we've done on John Sherman, Sam, and I think you worked maybe with somebody else on this, but when we first learned his name, when he was going to become the Royals owner, Sam did a pretty fast but deep dive on the philanthropic background and all the things he was involved with. And I spent considerable time with him at spring training, I think that next spring, and we got talking about the ballpark, but also about his past and why he's been so involved in those things. He needs to be, I think, well, it doesn't need to be. They need to, you know, get it across in a better way that this guy is very civic minded. He's a Kansas Cityan. He's adoptive, but he's a Kansas Cityan. That being said, they have a chance to demonstrate that he is that dedicated to Kansas City, Missouri, and Jackson County by, you know, taking from this the lesson of, we didn't do enough, we didn't listen enough, we didn't get the message right. All these things we've talked about. But I one last time, I'll just say, I mean, I am actually saddened that he's been, I think, miscast in some of the tactics and lines.
Because to your point, a lot of this project could still be done the right way. Like, it's like, this was a matter, like I said earlier, of giving themselves too short of a runway to publicize these details. It wasn't. Like, a lot of our criticism at the Kansas City Star and the reporting we were focused on was not about a lack of what they were deciding was final. It was more about what we didn't know yet.
Well, one last thing on that point, I meant to touch on this earlier, that we've talked about it, and I think you've articulated in columns too, but imagine if this the rollout had begun for the Crossroads 8 months ago. In fact, if it had been in that September slot when they announced what the finalists would be, we don't have a crystal ball into that parallel universe, but I believe they could have found a way to engage and soothe, whatever, all the words you want to say, and not just say the right things, but demonstrate it more in the area, both in and around it.
Well, certainly be more consistent with the messaging.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we have to dive into what's next. Yes, there needs to be the Royals and Chiefs need to learn as much as they can about why it happened. But even if they do, what happens now? I think the options range from maybe another vote at some point, separation of the teams, if it comes to that, if it comes to another vote, relocation inside the metro area, outside the metro area. All these have, you know, the mind wanders a little bit when it comes to this, a vote that was as decisive as it was. But hey, what are the early thoughts on what might happen next?
Well, I do think part of the process will be that they step back and ask themselves, what are our options, right? I mean, they're not just going to say, okay, we're diving back into Jackson County. I think, and probably in a certain way, that's the most responsible thing to do too, is like, okay, what else should we think about? And I think the first fundamental question is, to what degree the Royals and Chiefs untether from each other in how this approach is. I suppose that is the secondary point to whether one or both would consider whatever appeal Kansas might make to them. I think we all know the Chiefs have far more leverage if they want to do something. I suppose that could also mean if Kansas is really interested in something, doesn't think it can bring both, wouldn't Kansas just go hard after the Chiefs? I think those are the first things that come to mind, but I know Sam has a better sense of the undercurrent from behind the scenes for sure.
Well, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I think the Royals, it's too strong to say they're stuck, but I don't exactly know what's next for them, because we all know the reasons they want to move downtown is to go where they think everything's happening, you know, and going to Kansas at, you know, a Legends location or something of that sort doesn't solve any of that. They're not able to build around there. They're going to where something already is. They're not able to make money off of surrounding development. So I really feel like their next step, and I don't know whether it's today, tomorrow, weeks from now, once they're able to cut the emotions out of this, is to, you know, try and go back to the same place they're trying to go now. And I think they would have to try and get the city more involved, maybe more involved than the city is comfortable getting. I don't think that Mayor Quentin Lucas is eager to lose these teams on his watch. And I think you could use that to your advantage potentially. And with the Chiefs, I think it's a bigger question. I mean, there's no doubt that Governor Laura Kelly is looking at this situation and viewing it as an opportunity. And
this is, by the way, the Kansas governor who has already lured a Panasonic plant to DeSoto and has turned a deficit into a surplus.
You know, they've got money.
They've got money, yeah. And she's a kind of a can-do governor.
Yeah. So I know that there's fear among those on the yes side of this vote who are on the yes side of it for Jackson County specifically. So I know that there's fear about what happens next to the Chiefs. Having said that, and Vahe put this in his column, the best homes for these teams remain the plan that they rolled out for them. The voters obviously decided it was not for them, but for the teams themselves, there's a reason this was their plan A, is because they believe these are their best options. But again, for the Chiefs side, I mean, we all know that from covering the negotiations with Frank White and Jackson County that, you know, there were some bitter steps in this situation that the Chiefs and Royals both would have to get over emotionally. And Clark Hunt does not seem, I mean, he wasn't at the event last night. It does not seem like he's been as hands-on. He does also seem somebody who's pragmatic. And I think that he'd be the one that would say, guys, we got to take a deep breath and step back from this and just and realize that this still is our best option. How does that look? And I agree with you guys that it's a separation of the two teams, I think, if this does go back to the ballot. But this is, I do want to point something else out. This is going to be a while. This is not something we're going to know, I think, in July. You know, I think you could be looking at like next year, like the earliest, before you see a different voter base that's deciding how this is, how this is going to go.
That's a great point to introduce right away, because what would it take to now be thinking in terms of a November?
Well, I mean, on the Kansas side, there are so many hurdles you have to go through to move across the state line. A business of that magnitude, and also at the league level as well. Like, I'm talking like a 5-year process minimum. And so you've got to have, you would assume, based on the vote we just had, a lot of that stuff figured out even before you go to the polls. And so I think that whatever they do, if they determine, if they're on the fence about an offer from Kansas and Jackson County, the one from Kansas is going to require a hell of a lot more work, I think, than the one in Jackson County would.
Let me just lob this thought out there. It came from an email from a reader today, and you've been around, both you guys have been, but Blair, you were working during this, you know, the one bi-state effort that, that basically worked. What would have happened if this had been a bi-state appeal? It would have been more soundly defeated?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I don't know if the percentages would have been as great in the other counties as they as it was in Jackson County, simply because of the tax burden on Jackson Countyans. But I bi-state passed once, right, for the Union Station refurb. It failed in 2004 for raising, you know, stadium tax, and it passed only in Jackson County, and it failed in Platt, Cass, or Clay. I always get my Missouri counties mixed up, but Johnson and Wyandotte. I think the margin would have been closer in other counties than I think Jackson County has just had a more specific reason to vote no.
Yeah. The thing I think about a bi-state tax possibility is that this has already failed once. And I think a lot of people would be nervous about the Chiefs and Royals going to a ballot having something fail twice, because the possibility we haven't talked about is them moving out of the Metro. Because frankly, I don't think that is a great possibility at all.
For either team?
For either team. If this moves, if this fails a second time, then I don't think there's a lot of political leaders that would be eager to put something on a ballot, even if it is a bi-state thing, for the fear of what it means if there's two failures on the record.
I think that's a great point. I mean, whatever reformed plan process they have, if it comes back in Jackson County and it's turned down a second time, now we're talking about a year closer probably to the end of the lease. Royals already having said we're not playing there after the lease. And a real, you know, extra repudiation of even wanting them here.
Yeah, and the teams were right about the lease timing. I mean, Frank White consistently said it's 7 years out. Why are we doing this? Or like, these things take time. The Chiefs have a World Cup coming up. Like, the timing was not, should not have been an issue for when they were trying to get this
done. It really wasn't. In the original lease, was set to expire in 1997. The lease was renewed in 1990. When they went to the polls in 2004 and in 2006, there was about 7 years to go before. This is when this happens. It's about 7 years out. So, the timing wasn't an issue.
No, and it might have been with some voters, because that was a message that was coming from Frank White. It should not, the timing of this made some sense. Especially, we know the Royals wanted to move downtown sooner rather than later. And as I mentioned, I mean, the Chiefs with the World Cup, like, they couldn't start construction until after that World Cup. You'd like to get something settled probably before then. But that's another, just sorry, real quick last point, is that if something happens to where one of these teams is vacating the building, now they're probably going to have to stay there a little bit longer than they would have otherwise before construction might start. And I do think, just from chatting with some people, there's some fear about what's going to happen to those buildings in the interim. You know, the Chiefs are hosting a World Cup. If they make a decision to go elsewhere within the Metro, what's that stadium look like when the World Cup is coming? You wouldn't have owners that are eager to put a lot of money into buildings that they would be vacating, which we've already seen with some examples of the Royals, because they thought they'd be vacating that building.
One question I have for both you guys is, how are we to view the meaning of Frank White going forward in this? Is it as simple as he can be worked around if he's going to be obstinate, or whatever, however you characterize him? because of the veto we've seen before?
Great question, because a lot of these county legislators will be up for vote, and I think it's like a year and a half or so, and I don't think any of them want this on the ballot as they're about to have a vote for their futures. And so I think that is another set of, look, this got on the ballot after a major turnover at the Jackson County legislature last year. So I thought that worked to their advantage, and that would be an advantage that they would not have. Now, what's Frank White's future, I think, is another question as well, if they could wait that out. But as we just mentioned with the lease timing, that would be longer than they'd like.
One last thing. You know, one of the reasons they wanted it on the ballot now was because of the, I suppose what we could say is understanding that Governor Parson is partial to helping out with this, and he'll be out of office. There's no way to read, you know, who his successor will be and what that stance will be from them. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, there's thoughts on who will probably be that, and there's probably support there, but it's exactly what you just said. That's why they wanted to go now, because they know it now, and it's just the known versus the unknown.
Fascinating stuff, all of it. Thanks to Sam McDowell and Vahe Gregorian. Both were great columns. I urge you to go to kansascity.com and read the column. So until next time, we'll talk to you guys later. That'll do it for this episode. Thanks to producer Monty Davis for putting together the show, and to our SportsBeat KC staff of Randy Mason, Jeff Rosen, and Scott Chasen. Tip of the cap to Vahe Gregorian and Sam McDowell for sharing their insights. Check out Morning Sports Edition. It offers complete coverage of the sales tax issue, plus all the coverage you want of the Chiefs, the Royals, the colleges, soccer, so much more. Find it at liveedition.kansascity.com. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think of the show and offer suggestions of what you'd like to hear by leaving a review along with a rating. We'll be back soon with another episode of SportsBeat KC, where we talk sports in and around Kansas City.